Chapter 27. Petra turned so quickly she cricked her neck and found herself meeting eyes with another tall, dark gentleman. But this one was different. His features were harsher. He was older. Perhaps, just perhaps, something did twang deep inside her. But if so, it could have been fear, or a reaction to the sudden attention in the Marquis of Hrothgar's dark eyes. Why was he looking at her like that? He took a graceful farewell of his companions and came toward them. Like his brother, he was dressed plainly, dark hair simply tied back. Like his brother, no one would mistake him for an ordinary man. He said nothing, so Lord Bright explained. "I found this lady being harassed by the officious Mistress Digby, and she said she wished to speak to you. I haven't searched her for weapons." "We haven't searched anyone here for weapons. It would be unfair to single out one, and I do believe no one's tried to assassinate me for at least a year." He bowed slightly. "Ma'am?" Petra was unable to speak. Though everything else was casual, his gaze was not, and she'd never imagined this moment taking place with so many people nearby. "Perhaps you would care to visit the house," he said, gesturing. "I have a number of items that might interest you." She was frozen again, wildly imagining dungeons or her disappearing entirely. Who would ever know? "Bay," said Lady Bright anxiously. The Marquis smiled a little. "Am I being terrifying?" "I mean you no harm at all, my dear. But if you would prefer, Lady Bright can accompany us."
"Forse dovremo andare in un luogo un po' più appartato per discuterne."
At the Italian, Petra's breath caught. He had simply said they should discuss matters in private, but it showed that he knew, or at least suspected, who she was. She couldn't read his emotions, but she didn't see rage or fear, and this was the encounter she'd come so far to achieve. So when he held out his arm, she put her hand on it and allowed him to lead her away. Robin dressed grandly because Teresa Cornelis valued such things, and his chairman would carry him right into the richly decorated entrance hall, so there'd be no chance of being seen in finery at this time of day. He climbed out, looking around. He'd been to Carlyle House on a number of occasions for her assemblies, but the place seemed strange now, empty and echoing, like a theatre set. Teresa Cornelis swept downstairs to greet him, dressed like a duchess, and with an equally grand manner. But her eyes were sharp as a hawk's. If Petra had found refuge here, Robin would be grateful, but he'd also remove her as soon as possible. He followed the woman to a reception room and declined refreshments. He sat and asked his question.
"Petra de Verio, my lord?"
she said, painted brows rising with what looked like honest astonishment. Her Italian accent was stronger than Petra's, but achingly reminiscent.
"I haven't seen her since she was a child."
"You do know her, though?" She shrugged with a typical spreading of the hands that also reminded him of Petra.
"Does one know the daughter of a patroness? I saw her playing with her dolls, a pretty child. Very dark."
Slyly she added,
"Neither Il Conte nor her mother was so dark."
Robin was momentarily stunned. The woman had casually confirmed Petra's story. She was the Contessina Petra de Verio, and he was awed by her courage and resilience when tossed out into the harsh world.
"You knew her mother well, I understand."
Another shrug.
"She wished to improve her voice and was kind enough to hire me, but yes, a warmth developed. We were close in age." Then I'm sorry to have to tell you that she recently died, ma'am.
Ah.
Her face pinched, but she said, It was all long ago, and I haven't seen her for over a decade. Did you correspond? Occasionally. I'm a busy woman, my lord. Things linger undone. And that might be the root of her business problems. Despite the popularity of her entertainments and the high prices she charged, she teetered constantly on the edge of bankruptcy. I gather the contessina was not, in fact, her husband's child, Robin said. Her painted face became even more mask-like.
Who would say that?
You implied it, ma'am, and her brother has confirmed it, now that his mother is dead. She made a moo of disgust, but no other comment. Did the Contessa tell you who Petra's father was?
Why does that concern you, Lord Huntersdown?
For my own good reasons. He could almost see her calculating profit and loss.
Amalia never mentioned his name, only that he was young and English, and of course perfection in every way. She fell foolishly in love, my lord, a sad affliction of the young. She was fortunate that it did not end in disaster.
There seemed to be some fondness there, so Robin decided to tell her a bit of the truth. It may still harm Petra. Now the Contessina's mother is dead and her brother has shamed her, she has fled to England. I hoped she had contacted you.
Me?
No doubting the astonishment.
Of course I would welcome my old friend's daughter if she came to me, but this is extraordinary.
Robin lost any lingering hope that the woman was concealing Petra. He rose, hating having to still use the stick to take the weight off his leg. If she should come here, ma'am, I would be grateful for word of it. She rose too, studying him.
Pardon me, my Lord Huntersdown, but what are your attentions to little Petra?
He replied coolly. I encountered her in France and was able to do her a small service. I was concerned by her lack of firm plans and hoped to hear good news of her.
She promised to become a beautiful young woman, she remarked,
and has fulfilled that promise, but I wish her no ill, ma'am.
Young gentlemen like you, my lord, think no ill of ruining women.
Mistress Cornelis, you would not want to make me your enemy. Her cheeks reddened beneath the rouge, but she said, Would you marry her?
That is none of your business.
As I seem to be in place of her mother, I must disagree. Perhaps this woman had good intentions after all. I rejoice that you will stand her friend, ma'am. If she comes to you, will you send me word?
Every inch the grand lady, she said, That, my lord, shall be up to her.
Robin's jaw tensed with frustration, but he said, I would be generous to anyone who relieved my anxiety. He noted the flash of greed in her eyes before she masked it and accompanied him to his chair. As one of his men opened the door, she said,
I have seen advertisements for a man called Vazzi.
Robin halted.
Yes? He came here. He too seemed to think Petra might seek refuge with me.
You gave him the same answer?
It is the truth, my lord.
Robin settled in his sedan and was carried outside. He'd achieved nothing except confirmations. Petra's story was true, and Vazzi was in London seeking her. He had to capture the man, but the advertisement was doing no good. He returned home and went to his study to make new plans. He'd left Petra's splotchily written letter on his desk, and picked it up to read it through for perhaps the 10th time. This time he noticed that the rough wax seal held traces of a fingerprint, and wasted time studying it. Contessina Petra Daverio. Still the misbegotten daughter of a careless Englishman. Still penniless, and highly unlikely to be a discreet, pragmatic wife. But he was sliding down a slope without hope of reverse. His mother was going to rage, but at least Petra was aristocratically born and raised. He was certain she'd acquit herself perfectly in drawing room and ballroom, and execute the tricky court curtsy with ease. Was he actually imagining her presented at court? Of course, for as his wife, his countess, she must be. Smiling wryly at his own folly, he kissed the broken wax, then tucked the letter under his waistcoat, close to his heart. For the first time in an age, part of his way was clear. He would stop Varzi, but also find Petra, and convince her to give him a second chance. Thorne arrived with no news, however. No one appeared to the watching Carlyle house, and no one had left with a message. He'd left one man observing the place just in case. Robin reported what Mistress Cornelis had said. "She spoke the truth," Thorne said. "That's my assessment. So your Petra's extraordinary story is true. And I need to find her, but in God's name, at this point, where do I start?" "Why not insert another advertisement? Much good the last one has done me." Robin grabbed the map that sat open on his desk, marked with the Grainer farm and possible sightings. No amount of study revealed anything new, and Petra could be anywhere by now. The Marquis didn't speak, so neither did Petra. Like his brother, he moved without haste, exchanging words with his guests, pleasant to all. He did not, however, introduce Petra, which won her some strange looks. But how could he? She realized now that she'd not given Lord Bright a name, and Lord Hrothgar hadn't asked. They entered the house from a patio that led into a glass house, which led into a room whose walls were decorated with paintings of plant-twined trellises, as if to make a transition from the outside to within. Then they were in a wood-paneled corridor inside a great house that seemed very weighty and eerily quiet. Petra couldn't help but shiver. "You have nothing to fear from me," he said, as he took her down the corridor and into a gilded marble hall with a huge empty fireplace and a sweeping staircase. A solitary footman stood impassively by the closed front door. "But I do have something to show you." He led her down another corridor into a small room lined with cupboards and drawers, and with a table and chairs in the center. "This is where we keep our surplus ornaments," he said, pulling open one shallow drawer, then another. "Ah." He removed something and turned to offer it to her. Petra took the small oval miniature of a young man against sketchy Italian ruins. The picture had not been executed by a great artist, but it caught the luminous beauty some youths possess before they truly become men. He was dark-eyed, and his dark hair hung loose around his collar. He looked astonishingly like her. "Sit," he said, moving a chair for her. Petra did so. Otherwise she might have crumpled to the floor. "So it's true." "You doubted it?" "I'm sorry if that little performance shocked you. I have a lamentable taste for theatrics. Do you need something? Tea? Wine?" Petra breathed deeply a few times. "Perhaps I do. I don't think I've eaten enough recently." He left, and she studied the picture, seeing the young man who'd enraptured her mother. beautiful, but so very young. But then her mother had been only 20, though married for 5 years. He returned and moved a chair to face hers. As he sat, he said, "Don't feel you have to talk. We have time." "You have guests, many guests." "And family to fill the breach. Bright and Portia, Brand and Rosa, even my sister Hilda and her brood." She must have looked glazed, for he added, "Don't feel you need to remember anything. I'm filling a silence for fear you'll disappear, like a genie from an Arabian tale." She studied him. "I don't think you fear anything." "Fear is not shameful, only cowardice." Petra looked down at her grubby hands on her cheap and dusty skirt, then looked up again. "Did you know?" "That you existed?" "No. Foolish of me not to wonder, but I was very young. I suppose I assumed that Amalia would tell me, but why should she?" "Her husband accepted you?"
"Yes," Petra said, not ready to get into the complexities.
"Your name?" he asked. She laughed with embarrassment at not having supplied it. "Petra Maria Daverio." He nodded, but there was a knock at the door. He went to open it and take a tray, preferring that a servant not see her. But the footman already had. The dark Marquis was taking this very calmly, but she couldn't read him at all. He still might want to make the embarrassment disappear. He placed the tray on the table and poured. "High-handedly, I ordered coffee, for few Italians like tea. Was I wrong?"
"No,"
she said, shivering slightly as the rich aroma reached her. How long had it been? Montreuil. She squashed down that thought. Her father must never learn about Montreuil, and especially not about what had happened on the Coulee. If she had any hope here, she needed her virtue. "Cream? Sugar?" he asked.
"Both, please."
Wearily, she added,
"Generously."
He smiled and complied, then put the cup and saucer into her hands. She sipped and sighed, then drank some more, savouring. She knew, however, that he was waiting for her story.
I don't know where to begin, my lord."
"There's no hurry." He placed a small plate by her, offering meat between slices of bread. "They're called sandwiches after the Earl of Sandwich, who invented them because he wouldn't leave the gaming table to eat. Useful at a time like this." When she took one, he smiled. "How delightfully novel, to feed a hungry child of my own."
"You have no other?"
But then she blushed and hastily took a bite. He'd only married last year, and one did not refer to bastards, even if one was one. "None." The sandwich was tasty and she was hungry, but she put it aside. "I must tell you that I could be bringing danger here, my lord." His brows rose, but he didn't seem alarmed. "Danger? From whom?" She didn't want to tell him, because it all led back to her folly. But she'd have no more people harmed over her.
"A man called Varzi, who works for the Conte di Purieri. Ludovico, il Conte, wants me, and has sent Varzi to drag me back."
He snapped his fingers. "That for Varzi. But it's good that you told me. What has he done so far? Has he hurt you?" He spoke without heat, but Petra felt as if she'd suddenly been surrounded by high walls and an army. She could almost weep for relief, but for fear, too. These were cold walls and a ruthless army. Her father must never learn about Robin, or he might turn his army on him,
on the man he'd see as having violated his daughter. Her father. Her mother had been correct about the resemblance, but she couldn't have known he'd have a picture in which he looked so much the same, so she'd still trusted to remembered kindness. But the harsh-featured man before her had doubled his age and become the dark marquis, the eminence noir, the dualist. When all Petra wanted was to collapse into someone's strong protection, she would have to dredge up a little more strength and stay on guard. Vatsi seized me in Boulogne, she said, choosing each word. I escaped, but he injured two men who were trying to help me. I must confess to injuring one of Vatsi's men when I escaped. There may be trouble over that. No French legal matter can affect you here. As for this Vatsi, now that I know, he will not bother you further. Do all Englishmen think themselves invulnerable, she thought. Don't underestimate him, my lord. I try never to underestimate people, especially enemies. Do you think he has followed you here? I took great pains to lose any pursuers. Good. He need not worry you any longer, my dear. Irritation sparked. She might have wanted a father, but she didn't want to be patted on the head and told not to worry. Perhaps he read her thoughts, for he smiled slightly. You must allow me a father's right to protect. That was exactly what she was afraid of. He rose. I am delighted you found me, Petra, but I must return to my guests. May I assume you would like to rest, bathe, and change? Petra rose too, remembering her sorry state. I'm sorry, and I have no other clothes. No matter. Clothes can be found. I believe you're of a size with my wife. She'd forgotten his wife. She will not mind. Lending you a gown? No. My existence. Mind a love affair over 20 years ago? She's much too wise. And in fact, you bring a precious gift. But that, too, must wait. He hesitated then, in a way that seemed unusual for him. I will not pressure you. But it would please me if you could eventually call me father or papa. She stared at him. You wish to openly acknowledge me? With such a striking resemblance, he said, amused, I see no choice. He went to the door to speak to the footman again, then returned to lead her out of the room, up the grand staircase, and into a warren of corridors. What sort of remote room did a bastard daughter warrant? This place is a maze, he said. Too many piecemeal renovations over the centuries. Summon a footman to guide you, if you don't wish to wander. Most rooms have bell pulls. He opened a door into a lovely sunlit bedchamber, decorated in deep pink and creams. You may choose another later, but this is recently vacated and thus aired. The pull is there by the fireplace. Request anything you wish, my dear. This is now your home. I'll station a footman outside your door to serve as guide, and in case you're wrong about Signor Vatsi. The Abbey is more vulnerable than usual today. Vulnerable. Petra glanced outside, seeing the crowded estate with a new eye. He is ruthless, she warned. In Boulogne, he overpowered one guard and threatened to mutilate him unless I went with him. But he had two henchmen then. How many does he have now? None of those. One I wounded, the other was killed by a smuggler. I'm all admiration. But don't fear. My own position and activities demand a certain amount of security. He will not threaten you here. He left, and Petra sat on a chaise upholstered in deep pink velvet, weakened by relief, confusion, exhaustion, and fear, especially for Robin. Thank God she hadn't let him bring her here. She'd recognized the sort of man he was at first sight. The Marquis of Hrothgar would surely do the same. He did not seem to be a man who'd look kindly on a rake who'd fornicated with his daughter, no matter how protective he'd been. Of course she didn't need to reveal that, unless she turned out to be with child. That was a disaster she refused to contemplate. But many fathers would insist on marriage if their daughter was merely alone with a man in an intimate situation, never mind if she shared a bed with him. 3 times, if one counted the coach. A forced marriage. What a horrible thing to do to Robin, and she didn't want it herself. She was in such turmoil now, too raw and unsettled in this life to take steps that could not be reversed. She needed time to grow accustomed, to understand, to discover what opportunities she had and which she wanted. She would have to make sense of her story without mentioning Robin. No, that was impossible. Then she'd invent someone to play his part. She hated to start her new life with lies, but she must. She wiped tears from her face with her hands. First, she needed a name. She'd keep Robin, because she knew she'd make a mistake there sooner or later. Or Robert. That was more common, she thought. If anything he told her was true. She realized that she wasn't sure of anything. Ridiculous after their adventures, but she couldn't be sure even of Robin. She searched back to their first day, when they'd been playing that truth game and she'd been concealing facts. No doubt he had too, and largely because he didn't want a suspect adventuress to know too much. She wished he'd trusted her with the truth before they'd parted. But why should he? She hadn't revealed her secrets to him. But Robin. She had to believe that, or she had nothing, nothing at all. She had to come up with a surname that sounded realistic for an Englishman, and she knew such things were full of traps in a foreign language. She remembered Mighty Mike Cockcroft. Robert Cockcroft, then. Yes, that should work. What other details? Derbyshire might be true. In fact, Huntingdonshire probably was, so Robert Cockcroft must be from somewhere far from there. She envisioned a map of England and picked the toe that stuck out into the Atlantic, Cornwall. Robert Cockcroft, a quiet gentleman of impeccable virtue. Older, but not too old for adventures, about 40. Yes, that would do. She built Robert Cockcroft in her mind. A little grey, a little stocky. Kind and dependable, with no hint of cockiness. Next, she thought of protecting herself. She would have to admit to folly over Ludo, to try to explain his mad pursuit, but not the extent of it. One day rumours would reach here from Milan, but rumours could be denied. Or she'd prove to be with child, showing she'd made not one mistake, but 2. That made her cry again, but she pulled herself together. She was here. She had fulfilled her promise to her mother, and her mother's predictions had come true. Her father was willing to accept her, provide for her, and protect her. And if anyone could protect her, it was the Marquis of Hrothgar. He would pursue Vartzi, and that would help keep Robin and his men safe too. Possibly, just possibly, with luck and her wits, she would soon have again an orderly, secure life. First, she would have to tell her story, however, and she'd feel stronger and braver if she was clean and decent. She looked at the bell pull, but instead the lovely bed called to her. It was hung with cream cloth, scattered with embroidered wildflowers, the mattress covered with a cloth of the same design. Not now. Perhaps later, when she was clean. But then she couldn't resist. She stripped down to her shift, towed off her battered shoes, dragged down the covers, and climbed the short steps up onto fresh white sheets. She pulled the covers back up over herself, inhaling the sunshine in which the sheets had hung to dry, looking up at the gathered silk on the underside of the bed's canopy. A clean, well-aired bed will do, in a clean room. In a room entirely for myself. Oh, Robin, I hope you are in as good a state as I right now. With that, she fell fast asleep.